Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4, packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for true crime news. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Drill, baby, drill, and some of the energy transition projects that are underway in Louisiana, can we get the best of both worlds? Greg Upton joins us now, director of LSU's Center for Energy Studies. Morning, Greg. How are you?
Doing great. Good morning, Tommy.
Let's talk about how the energy policy, energy business in Louisiana is likely to change when President Trump takes office, because in his interview with Kristen Welker, he said one of his main priorities on day one is drill, baby, drill.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's really kind of three things that we're looking at in terms of potential policy changes that might come when President Trump, of course, takes office next year. So the first, of course, is we've got the Inflation Reduction Act and the IIJA, the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, that put billions of dollars into a lot of these energy programs that are impacting Louisiana. So we've got, of course, tax credits for wind and solar were in there, and we've got a lot of solar development going on. We also had the tax credit, the 45Q tax credit, which is for carbon sequestration. There's a rulemaking for hydrogen tax credits. And so what we're seeing is billions of dollars of investment in Louisiana that are really tied to these federal tax credits. So that's kind of question number one, is will these tax credits continue?
So let me slow you down a little bit, Greg, if I can, because you're talking about big investment here, big capital investment. How underway are these things, and if these credits go away, what happens to these projects that are already, I guess, underway or on the table? Where are these projects?
So that's a great question. A lot of these projects that are in the planning phases have not hit what's called the FID, the final investment decision. And a lot of that's the permitting and the planning and the getting all the contracts in order. But also part of that could be this kind of uncertainty as of what's going to happen next year when this new administration comes in. And so, yeah, if those tax credits are scaled back or go away, that could certainly impact specific projects. So I was actually in D.C. last week, coincidentally, talking with several congressional staffers in different congressional offices. And one of the things that someone said was that the new administration is really going to, quote, take a scalpel to the IRA and not really just kind of knock it over and start over. And so that was kind of some information that hopefully for these projects, that there won't be too big of changes out there. The second big thing that we're looking at is these international trade uncertainties. So you might recall years ago when the first, during the first administration of President Trump, you and I had talked about phase one of the China trade deal that was completed. And there was these agreements between the U.S. and China with trade. China was not really living up to that agreement going into the presidential election between Trump and Biden. And then phase two actually never occurred. It was a planned phase two because President Trump lost that presidential election. And so Trump has said publicly on the campaign trail that President Xi has failed to honor this deal and would raise the matter once elected. And so this is another kind of big uncertainty out there. Whenever I talk with international trade experts, what they tell me is although the rhetoric is very different between President Trump and President Biden, a lot of the policies themselves were actually not that much different. And one of the things to cite there is that actually China filed a complaint in the World Trade Organization against the United States when the Inflation Reduction Act, the IRA, was passed because of a lot of its kind of protectionist components there. And then the third leg, which you brought up at the beginning, which is this drill, baby, drill, that's the end of the supply-restricted policy. So, of course, we had the LNG export permitting pause that you and I have discussed several times, the offshore leasing pause that you and I have discussed, I think, many times. And so a lot of these kind of supply-restricted policies, the policies restricting the ability to supply hydrocarbons to the market, I think it's a pretty safe bet that those will not continue under a Trump administration.
So what does that look like if those do not continue, and what does that portend for Louisiana?
So LNG exports, of course, we've seen a lot of investment in that, and so that's going to not only impact the investment in liquefied natural gas export facilities, but also it allows for the supply of those hydrocarbons to eventually get out into the world and be exported. So that impacts both us on both the upstream production side as well as these facilities themselves. In terms of the offshore drilling, you know, in order to expand those lease sales, the Biden administration really kind of slowed those lease sales and got critique for that. Expanding those lease sales, of course, will generate more economic activity here in the state with that offshore oil and gas production. The other piece of it, which to me is perhaps even more important in the long run, is we're undergoing these literally $100 billion of investments across the energy supply chain right now that we highlighted in our outlook that we released last week. And a lot of those investments are using these hydrocarbons as a feedstock to produce liquid fuels, chemicals, plastics, fertilizers, all of these products that we ship all over the U.S. and internationally. And so having long-term stability in terms of the supply of those inputs, not only access to affordable energy, but also the supply of the inputs themselves, I think is a really important thing if you're going to make these long-term investments in this region.
You know, I was talking earlier about President Trump being an ideologue or not, and when it comes to green energy, you can look at it two ways. You can look at it as you want to clean up the environment, or you can look at it as, is there money to be made at this, not at the expense of oil and gas? So we'll talk about that when we come back with Greg Upton, our friend, director of LSU's Center for Energy Studies. I also want to talk about these credits for 7,500 tax credits for electric vehicles. We spoke about this yesterday at 9 o'clock hour and got kind of detailed into that as well. Y'all have any questions or comments, 504-260-1870. One third thing I'll add before we go to the break is that I know years ago I was told that all the easy oil that could be gotten out of the Gulf was gotten, and now it was not as easy, and that's why the leases weren't as popular. So we'll look into that as well. Now it's 7:21, and we look at traffic on WWL. 7:27, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Greg Upton, director of LSU's Center for Energy Studies. So, Greg, I was talking earlier about, you know, the politics of all of this, and you can't divorce politics from it. I don't know that President Trump, in my opinion, is that much of an ideologue when it comes to things like immigration and tariffs, certainly. But when it comes to green energy, if there's a buck to be made at it, whether you want to do it for cleaning up the world or not, is it a viable future burgeoning industry for Louisiana, I guess what I'm trying to ask?
Yeah, so I think there's a few pieces of this, and the answer, I guess, is nuanced for each one. Mm-hmm. So the most obvious one right now is solar energy. So we're seeing a lot of utility-scale solar investments moving forward in the state. When I look at the cost of a utility-scale solar relative to the prices of electricity, that's one that really is, it's pretty economic at this point. And so I think that the federal tax credits certainly are helping that, and I think solar is moving a lot faster because of those federal tax credits. But that's one that it's not, you know, it's not surprising that you're seeing a lot of investment there. You've got offshore wind, which I think is a few years out. I think that that's a little bit higher cost right now. So you're seeing several projects moving forward, a lot of the planning associated with it. But with electricity prices today being as low as they are, and that's primarily because natural gas prices are very low, I think that that's going to be a little bit more challenging in the short run. But again, those federal tax credits help that. Whether we'll see those move forward will be a matter of, number one, what are the costs, and number two, what happens to electricity prices.
All right.
The third kind.
Go ahead.
Absolutely.
No,
yeah, go
no,
on.
No. I'm here every day, Greg. I want to hear you.
So the third leg of this, I think, is really this industrial decarbonization. So Louisiana is a very emissions-intensive state because we produce these products like liquid fuels, chemicals, plastics, fertilizers, all of these products that use a lot of energy in order to produce and are also very emissions-intensive. So we're seeing very large investments in carbon sequestration, very large investments in hydrogen production, bio-based feedstocks or biofuels, and of course we could do a segment on each one of those. But what fundamentally are those investments? They're investing in producing these products in lower carbon intensity.
Well, come on back. We'd love to have you. Real quick, when it comes to drill, baby, drill, oil leases, suspension, I know Eric Smith at Tulane told me a long time ago a lot of the easy oil, and maybe you told me this, I don't know, because we've been doing this a while, in the Gulf has already been obtained. So are oil leases in the Gulf as popular as they used to be, Greg? Is there the demand
oil
for
products? Yeah, oil production in the Gulf last year was actually very high, and we project it kind of continuing flat out into the future. So there's a lot of potential out there for offshore oil.
You just got to keep going further out, right?
That's correct, yeah. And it's, you know, getting the geology right. But, yes, there's a lot of potential out there for production in the Gulf of Mexico.
Talk to you again soon, Greg. Thank you. Pleasure as always. Greg Upton, director of LSU Center for Energy Studies. We'll talk Saints with Steve Geller, WWL sports director. When we come back right now, time for WWL First News. All right, 7:46, 14 till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL. I was talking about the guy that got arrested in Altoona, PA, and I was got kind of confused or got it got lost. I was asking you to help me fill out my brackets here, Ohio State or Tennessee. Who wins in Columbus at the Horseshoe on December 21st? Steve Geller joins us now, WWL sports director. Hey, Steve, how are you?
Hanging in there this morning, Tommy. How you doing?
I hear you. I may as well get your take on this. Who you think, Tennessee or Ohio State?
I'm going to lead towards the SEC in this matchup, although Ohio State, definitely a tough, scary matchup for them, but going SEC all the way for sure.
It's going to be cold in Ohio on December 21st, but Tennessee
right.
plays some cold games too, don't they?
Yeah, for sure. I don't think the weather will be that brutal up for the Ohio State game. It won't be that bad.
I'm going to go Ohio State on this one. And what do you have with Clemson, Texas?
Oh, Texas for sure. Yeah, I think Clemson is I'm not feeling the Clemson matchup at all. The Tigers, I think, get caged in that one. Unfortunately for them, hasn't been an overall great ending to the season for them.
And after what I saw Saturday night against Oregon, I got to go with Penn State. But when it comes to Indiana and Notre Dame, that's the confusing one for me because I despise Notre Dame. I loathe
Notre
Dame.
I'm with you right there.
So I don't know how to be objective about this one. I don't know.
No, that's tough too. Kind of like Hebert is with the Cowboys. I'm always picking against Notre Dame.
Yeah, so I don't know what to do there. Let's talk about the Saints and Derek Carr. What do we know about him at this point?
Yeah, Coach Darren Rizzi said today they have not ruled him out for Sunday yet, even though there were reports that he was dealing with a fracture in his non-throwing hand and that the team was going to put him on injured reserve, according to the NFL Network's Ian Rappaport. He changed his change, of course, too, after Rizzi spoke and said, no, they're not putting Carr on IR. They don't even think he needs surgery. They're still wait-and-see kind of approach and taking things week to week. But the problem also is with Carr is that he doesn't also have that injury to his non-throwing hand. He's also currently in the concussion protocol, so would have to clear that as well. So it's like a double whammy right there. But right now, too, the Saints weren't ready yesterday, at least, to make any kind of announcement if Carr can't go, whether it would be Spencer Rattler or Jake Haener.
Jake Haener or Der Rattler.
right.
Let's talk about Kendre Miller. Thoughts on him, what you saw?
I liked the little bit of action we saw from him coming back. It was good to see him get into the end zone, obviously. The Saints' run game wasn't impressive at all, unfortunately, against the New York Giants, even though you had looked at this matchup and you thought that the Saints would be able to run all over them, and that wasn't the case. Giants really stacked the box right there. There were too many negative plays. I think it was a total of 10 runs that went for negative yards in that matchup. That's not good at all.
Yeah.
But Kendre Miller definitely, You know he's rested, so has that extra juice about him right now. But overall, what we've seen on this running back when he's healthy, and that's the unfortunate caveat with things, but when he's on the field, he's definitely been a producer, kind of a great compliment, I think, to a guy like Alvin Kamara because he has more of that power factor to him. And, you know, so, a little more he's elusive as well, but can definitely, you know, power through runs. And with a guy like Taysom Hill not around anymore and Jamal Williams being very limited at all this year in this offense, you need some kind of physical presence. And I think Kendra Miller can provide that. And hopefully stays on the field because we're going to need him in this final four-game stretch.
Yeah, ain't nobody going nowhere unless that offensive line is blocking. And the offensive line was together. Yeah, we'll pick it up when we come back. You just said it. We'll pick it up when we come back. Talking to Steve Geller, Saints WWL Sports Director, talking about the Saints. And the Giants will also look ahead to the Jaden Daniels and the Commanders, 7:50, 10 till 8. Traffic now, WWL. Steve Geller joins us, WWL Sports Director, 7:57. I'm Tommy Tucker. This is, of course, WWLAMFM.com and the Odyssey app. Steve, offensive line was back, and, I was expecting better things. Thoughts?
Yeah, that was a big disappointment this past game. You had, you know, Eric McCoy back in the mix. Cesar Ruiz was coming off of the concussion protocol and was able to play. Also, Lucas Patrick. The starting five was there, but, man, oh, man, the pressure that the Giants were able to bring on Derek Carr was, you know, constant the entire game. A guy like Kayvon Thibodeau, Brian Burns were just in his face, and it was just a rough day all around. And I know a lot of people complain about check down Carr, but the guy didn't have any time. That's going to be a problem, obviously, this week, too, against the Washington Commanders team that's 8-5 and trying to make the playoffs. They've been looking really good this year.
So when he's Derek Carr, let's talk about him and his left hand. I get if he's, you know, if they numb it up and he's from the shotgun, even though that's not guaranteed,
yeah.
I can't imagine him being under center taking a snap with a broken left hand unless they numb it completely. And if they do, then I don't know how he feels when the ball gets there.
Yeah, it's definitely going to depend on, obviously, the severity of this, what kind of equipment they can put on that left hand, because that was a question I had for the Cajun Kid and Bobby Hebert, too. I'm like, can he legitimately take a snap? Mm-hmm. We know he can throw the ball with his right hand, but he's still got to, you know, get the ball and have to deal with that with his left. And the canon says, obviously, too, depending on how much pain, the severity of this thing, he's seen quarterbacks be able to do this in the past, even Coach Rizzi pointed a guy like Justin Herbert who was able to play with this injury.
People that have never played center don't realize that's a pretty intimate relationship between a quarterback and the center, and that ball is going up there pretty fast. It's not just being handed off gently. Let's talk about the Commanders. What kind of offensive line, defensive lines do they have? What is it the Saints are going to have to watch out for besides Jaden Daniels, and they've not done well against running quarterbacks?
Oh, that's what scares me the most, Tommy. Obviously, we know Jaden Daniels well from his LSU days. Has been passing well, completing 70% of his balls. Also running well, obviously averaging 5.5 yards a carry right now. Their rushing game, too, has got a guy like Brian Robertson Jr. who is a problem. This offense can put up points. Defense is kind of on par with the Saints. Not too worried that much there, but man, oh, man, I don't think the Saints can keep up with this Washington team if they allow them to get into the end zone.
Thank you, Steve Gell. Appreciate your time, your insight, as always, my friend. We'll be listening for y'all tomorrow night when y'all are at the Treasure Chest Casino with Mike Dettillier. Have a good time until then, all right?
Cheers, Tommy.
All right, same to you, sir. Of course, Steve will be on this evening, Sports Talk with Bobby and Mike, and he'll talk to John Summerall. Also, they'll talk with Mark Schlereth. Mike Haas will be on with Mickey Loomis for the Saints Hour at 7 and more.